Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special bonus crossover episode of the Cinematic Schematic, the official podcast of thecinematropolis.com and Good Trash Media's The Garbage Chute, reviewing the film kicking off summer movie season 2024, The Fall Guy. I'm Caleb Masters.
And I'm Dalton Stewart. Caleb, you got Cinematic Schematic in my garbage chute. I got garbage chute in your Cinematic Schematic.
Does that mean my schematic's now a bunch of garbage?
No, I think it's two great tastes that go great together is sort of the premise I'm working on here.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
Amazing.
And to complete the table,
my name's Alexander Bohannon, and I watch Love Actually in Notting Hill every year.
I heard that Love Actually joke gonna pop out of you. Yeah,
this is the one line that I carried with me from the viewing of The Fall Guy into this audience, this chamber in which we are potting together. So
happy to be talking with both of you today. We're going to kick things off today with a spoiler-free review of The Fall Guy, where we'll provide our overall thoughts on the movie. From there, we'll provide a verdict, and then we'll close out the show with a very short spoiler section. Hey, this is a super cool thing. The three of us podcasted together regularly once upon a time.
What a treat. What a treat to be with both of you. We were talking just before we got rolling about how we almost did John Wick 4 together.
It's very
for
true.
For Cinematic Schematic, and I couldn't make that one. But it's been around the corner for so long. It's finally happening. What a treat to be reunited with both of you at Mike's.
Yes, I was reminiscing. Basically, the last time we were all potting together was we did a episode covering Titanic. I think that might have been
I think it was 300.
I was going to say that was going to be like 4 years ago.
Oh, I think
it's even more than that.
I think that's
Arthur's
5 years.
Like two houses ago. Yeah. Oh. Or like two
so Alex,
spaces ago.
Think about it this way. It was 100% pre-pandemic, which means it was at least 4 years ago.
I was 100% not married, which means it was at least 5 years ago.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So it's been a minute. A grip, some would say.
Wow.
Well, our heart clearly has not gone on at the table. The synergy remains strong. For listeners tuning in who are not familiar, Dalton, co-host of the Good Trash Genre Cast, myself and Alexander Bohannon all used to be podcast regulars over at the Good Trash Genre Cast. You can find that over at goodtrashmedia.com.
That's right.
With that said, maybe we can talk, use that as a segue, Dalton, to talk a little bit about our shows, starting with GTGC.
Yeah, so obviously this is not our bread and butter, the new release thing. That's what we save our garbage chutes for. That's why we call it the garbage chute, because we're just throwing it in the chute quick and seeing what comes out, not taking the full hour plus that we usually take for older movies on the show when we're doing our whole talking about the films you wouldn't discuss in a film studies class, but we do it in a film studies type way. Instead of doing that, we garbage shoot sometimes when there's something new out that we're excited about. And so this is sort of like right in line with both of our sensibilities, right? This is sort of pure genre fare, which is what we love to cover over at GenreCast, obviously. And obviously it's got the new release. Not only is it a new release, it's like the new release of heralding the beginning of the summer movie season. So of course you guys were going to cover it.
Absolutely.
So it just sort of like, it fits perfectly together as far as like sensibilities and like what's a good movie to make a crossover for. It just kind of felt perfect, right?
It works out very perfectly because due to some weird scheduling shenanigans, I was not going to not cover Challengers, but that meant we weren't initially going to get to cover The Fall Guy. I'm talking to Alex Bohannon and she's like, "Are you going to talk about The Fall Guy?" I was like,
"I think I DM'd him like three times."
I was like, "I hate to say it, but no." But then you and I, Dalton, were chatting separately, and then just like light bulb, let's just do a crossover bonus episode. Who doesn't love some bonus garbage shoot content?
That's right. This is in both feeds. If you're not subscribed to both already, what are you doing? Do you even care about Oklahoma City Film Podcast?
Clearly not. If they aren't, get it together, listener.
I'm not one to brag, but I will say I challenge other Oklahoma podcasts to prove they've been going longer, definitely longer than the Genre Cast, but even the Cinematic Schematic at this point. So
check us out.
You can find the Cinematic Schematic at thecinematropolis.com, your home to thoughtful conversations on film. All sorts of goodies coming up on our side too. We've got an Apes episode, I think a Challengers episode just dropped yesterday, and it's all been leading up to Furiosa, a Mad Max
so
saga
excited.
For me. So.
Well, and Caleb, I just realized what you were trying to set me up for. The timing's also perfect because in May, we're doing a Meta May marathon. marathon. We're just covering movies about making movies all month of May. So the release of The Fall Guy couldn't have been more perfectly timed for us to like slot this in with the regular release schedule.
Absolutely. It's a super exciting theme, by the way, especially when we think about, yes, we have The Fall Guy later this summer. There is Deadpool 3 and feel how you will about that series. But those are movies about kind of, especially The Fall Guy, about movies.
For sure.
Yeah,
we're Deadpool leaning into the meta nature. And it just feels like it's something that sort of proliferated the zeitgeist as of what, the last 5 years. Anyway, let's talk about The Fall Guy.
That's me, Colt Seavers. And this is my hero's journey.
Can we just start from the top?
Okay, I'm not the hero of this story. I'm just a stunt guy. Trying to look cool in front of the director of this movie. That's her, who I just so happen to have a major crush on.
We need to keep it super professional.
Cool. You want to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
Making out?
Yeah.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
There's just one little wrinkle.
The star of the movie,
Tom Ryder,
is missing. We need you to find him.
Why me?
You're a stuntman. No one's gonna notice whether you're here or not. No offense.
I mean.
So according to IMDb, The Fall Guy is described as a down-and-out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. So this movie, did you know this is one of those cool little pre-movie trivia questions that pops up on the screen?
Maria Menounos, please tell me.
Please, Maria. Oh, we should get her to guest host on this podcast. There we go. I'm sure she's here in spirit.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy is loosely based on an ABC series airing from November 4th, 1981 to May 2nd, 1986, starring Lee Majors as Colt Seavers. And the show was a hit, believe it or not. It aired 113 episodes.
That's right, like 4 or 5 seasons. Don't call it short-lived like I did. You'll get the Gen Xers in your mentions letting you know it had several seasons. Thank you, Dan Wade, host of the Wheel of Randy, for correcting me on that one.
Hey, 100 episodes is enough for syndication, man. So those actors were getting paid.
Somewhere, somebody in Taiwan is watching The Fall Guy, ABC's The Fall Guy right now, because that is, that's syndication numbers. That's qualifies. Yeah. That's playing somewhere in the world right now on a TV in a nursing home.
Man, it's incredible, though, because, I mean, just out of curiosity, did you guys know this? Before we saw the movie, did you know this was a television series?
I had a very vague awareness, but I thought it would be much more in line with what the plot of the film was. And from we all saw it at Flicks Brewhouse in Oklahoma City, and they have these little trailer bumpers, and they actually showed, like, probably 75% of one of the episodes, and it seems like it definitely is just more of the nature of Colt Seavers being, you know, either secret agent or just action guy doing action things with the baddies and whatever, but not none of the love story angle or really the
I mean, this movie is really, I think I'd read somewhere online that it was technically based on a show, but I've never seen an episode but I do think it was funny. This is probably a show that aired after like Matlock. You remember that show back in the 80s? Again, I don't even think, I don't want to date ourselves as millennials, but also Gen Z, do you even know what Matlock is? So it's one of those shows that was before our time.
Yes.
Now the film debuted at South by Southwest March 12th, 2024, and another cool piece of trivia. Maria, give us the ring in. The Fall Guy sets a new Guinness World Record for the most cannon rolls in a car at 8 rolls, which is beating out the previous record holder of 7 that was held by Casino Royale. So since what, 2005, 2006?
Yeah.
Wow.
So like, yeah, a decade plus record. Yeah, pretty cool.
And I love how, I guess this is a slight spoiler, technically, they acknowledge it in the world of the film because of the meta narrative of they're doing this cannon roll in the car. And yeah, this is all acknowledged in the world of the film, which is fabulous. So they get to have their cake and really eat it too on this one.
Gotta get that Hall H money shot.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
This is the 6th film directed by David Leitch, if you count John Wick.
Of course.
By the way, 5 if you don't count it, but he was technically the co-director of the original John Wick with Chad Stahelski, but he's since gone on to do a few other ones: Bullet Train, Atomic Blonde, Deadpool 2.
There's another
Hobbs
one.
Hobbs and Shaw. That was the one I forgot the other day.
How could I forget Hobbs and Shaw? That was the that movie's not very good, but it was good enough to bring me back to the Fast and Furious franchise after number 8, you know?
Well, so. To Alex's point about the movie frequently having its cake and eating it too, like David Leitch and Stahelski famously have set up this studio, formerly 8711 Productions, now 87 North Productions. But they are sort of like the go-to second unit. If you need help on your action, Stahelski and Leitch are your guys, and 87 North is who you want. And Winston Duke, throughout the movie, he's got his, you know, stunt team jumpsuit on, and it's got the little 87 North logo. And there's a crash pad in the movie
Huge crash pad.
So they sure did make sure to put the other side project up on the screen, which was cool.
You know, as a person who works in marketing, you just got to say that's some damn good branding.
$150 million commercial.
Exactly. I have to admire the hustle.
Oh, yeah.
I simply can't not.
Speaking of that budget, Alex, the film is reportedly budgeted somewhere between $125 and $150 million before marketing costs, which that's pretty high.
Spicy.
Might have needed to come down 50 to 75 on that.
Let's go 75.
Yeah. I think we sort of overshot on what the IP was worth, maybe.
Or Gosling? Do you think it was Gosling money?
I mean, Gosling and Blunt are probably not cheap at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's part of it, but that's not all of it. No, I mean, no shot. And I guess now is as good a time as any to mention sort of how that panned out for them. Obviously,
How did it pan out?
It opened to number one.
Great news, guys. Good job, team. High fives all around.
Actually, that's down 52% from last May.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
You know, every time that I want to say we're tired of superheroes, I then have numbers that counterbalance, but the point, it's a counterpoint. So Dalton, down 52% from last year's the film, the same weekend, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Now, I will say that was the biggest superhero movie of last year by a considerable margin.
Sure.
But still, just
May's a big weekend. The first weekend of May is a big one.
Absolutely. I mean, we got stuff like Fast Five. I mean, you could get any Marvel. Marvel's historically owned this weekend.
Yeah.
You
know? I mean, even if you go back pre-MCU, this is like the Spider-Man weekend.
Yep.
Spider-Man 1 opens at. So it's been the superhero weekend for a while. So, I mean, it's hard not to be excited about a non-cape movie opening the summer season. But boy, do you want it to do. I mean, like, even when the 35 projections came out, you're like, well, that's, you know, that's a healthy, like, opening. And then
given all these other, you know, well, post-COVID, we still haven't totally come back from COVID. It's not superheroes.
Under expectations. And it's just like we talked about this before we got rolling. But like you wanted to have legs with an opening like that. And you hope that like the strength of Challengers and Civil War's box office bleeds over to Fall Guy a little bit. Because,
yeah,
I mean, just as dorks who love following the industry and, you know, want there to be a robust movie going culture, it's frustrating to see a movie open that far below expectations.
Well, you know, and we'll get into this in the reviews. I'm always trying to come in looking at the positive side of things, especially for projects that I really want to believe in. And I did believe in this project, and we'll get into about our overall thoughts here in a second. But it is very disheartening when you constantly hear from people who don't go to the movies very often. Oh, there's too many superhero movies. Oh, there's no movies for adults. Oh, they don't make movies like this anymore. And then they make one, and then no one shows
Crickets.
Up.
Yeah. So frustrating.
That's disheartening in terms of just the entire ecosystem, mostly with the audiences, but, you know, it's tough.
I did hear the speculation, and I think that there's some merit to this, that, you know, this is a movie for 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds. This isn't really a movie that brings the 20-somethings.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some value to that. Like, it is very much a movie about a grown-up-ass relationships and grown-up-ass jobs. And, like, as much as it is an action rom-com, it is, like, trying to be a workplace comedy at some level, too.
Yeah, so, exactly. And it's interesting because you have, like, the other flip side of that coin is, like, you have hot, sexy, sleek people like Zendaya and Challengers. That's for the youngins, you know, the Gen Z cuspers and, you know, younger.
It's Zendaya. It's Zendaya.
It's Zendaya. Sorry.
Sorry, listeners, tune into our Challenger review where I was corrected on how to pronounce the name by like three people. But it is Zendaya.
Sorry about your post-traumatic stress disorder, Caleb.
Sorry. I did it. I've been saying Zendaya for 10 years and found out I was wrong.
Also same. So about Ms. Zendaya. She brings the youngins into the seats.
That's a fact.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
so and it tracks. Like, I mean, I don't recall from our screening seeing anybody younger than us in it.
No, it was all folks about our age and older.
Yeah.
I mean, to your point though, I think that's something to think about. Is I know you're like, oh, this is a fun action comedy. We'll bring in the youths. Got Ryan Gosling from Barbie. You know, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are definitely more millennial movie stars. 100%. I mean, I know they're elder millennials, but they're the ones that we grew up with, kind of falling in love with. Definitely don't have the youngins on the Drive fanboy wagon, you know?
I mean, I'm sure there is a 22-year-old somewhere that likes The Devil Wears Prada and Sunshine Cleaning as much as I do. But there's not a lot of those kids.
And yeah.
There's not enough of them to drive the box office of something like this, especially when it's like, got a budget like a superhero movie.
Right. Well, they're too obsessed with Barry Keoghan and what's the other guy's name from Saltburn? The Saltburn cast.
Oh, Jacob Elordi.
They love those people.
I get it. Those are some hotties.
Oh, they are.
They've got that generation has their own hotties. They don't really care about our hotties.
Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya.
Well, think about this, though, right? I mean, Zendaya?
Zendaya.
Zendaya.
Zendaya opens, you know, Challengers opens huge, but like, her co-star from Dune, Timmy, does Bones and All a couple of years ago, and that does not... I mean, that movie, like, did no business.
No business.
So, I mean...
Could have been the cannibalism, but, you know.
True, but it's just interesting to see, like, on name brand recognition alone, it's interesting. I mean, I guess he did open Wonka, but that's got Wonka behind it. You know, that's not just a Timmy thing.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm be curious to see, like, what sort of box office he manages to pull in compared to his co-star.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Well, we shall see. Yeah, but
we've talked metagaming enough, I think, right?
Well,
yeah. So let's actually talk about what did we think about the Fall Guy ourselves. I should note, last thing. It did get an A-minus cinema score.
Pretty good.
Which is pretty good, yeah. Which means word of mouth is pretty positive.
Okay.
With that said, what did we think of the movie, Dalton Stewart?
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's not $150 million, but that's pretty good. That cannon roll's sick. I like it when car go tumble. And then they do it again with like a bigger car. They like spin the bed of a, you know, construction vehicle down, you know, the streets of Sydney.
And apparently Ryan Gosling did a lot of those stunts.
Yeah, he did some. I mean, they talked at the Oscars about how it took like 8 stunt guys to make one Cole Seaver or something. Cause there's, you know, a fight guy and a driving guy and a falling guy. I mean, it's just, you know, every single toolkit, like, you know, not every stunt person is like actually a Swiss Army tool or a Swiss Army stunt person. Like, they have their specialties. You know, you are a martial arts expert, you're a driving expert, a pyrotechnics expert if you're more in, you know, less in the stunt person side of things and more in the stunt coordinator side of things. And so, like, that aspect of loving stunts, like, really appealed to me. Obviously, like, that's why we were going to do John Wick 4 together. Like, I'm a huge action movie head. It's one of, you know, my preferred genres. So I was definitely bought in at the level of like, I am excited for a movie that celebrates stunt folk. I'm excited for a movie that celebrates like why we go to the movies, like back to, you know, Buster Keaton and Chaplin, like stunts is what it's about, whether it's The Fall Guy or Jackass Forever. Like, we love watching people do wacky stuff with their bodies and with vehicles. And that this movie has that. It's also got like some rom-com flair. It, you know, it doesn't reach the heights of like the rom-com adventure greats like The Mummy and Romancing the Stone, yeah. Right? So, but it's got a little bit of that spark.
Yeah, this is a tablespoon.
Yeah.
Half a teaspoon.
Yeah, there's like moments of adults like opening up to each other and having real conversations, but like moments. Yeah, moments. And I think that's maybe one of my biggest complaints is I do want more of that from this just because they're selling so much of this movie on it being sort of an action rom-com. And the rom is lacking, unfortunately. The com's mostly there. The bits are pretty good.
The bit towards the beginning of the movie where they're having an conversation about their relationship via the movie script on set in front of all the other cast and crew was pretty funny.
Not a Taylor stan myself, wouldn't begrudge anyone else, but Gosling's Taylor moment in the car and sort of the conversation that unfolds because of that is really great. It's sort of a highlight for me as far as those kind of heavy on the rom-com moments.
Well, and I'm curious to hear what Alex thought about that too, with the diegetic versus non-diegetic.
Oh yeah, that was so nice. I love that. Yeah,
yeah.
When it flowed in.
All in all, it's pretty fun. I don't know that the like them referencing movies to each other always works. Some of them kind of land. Some of them I'm like, nobody remembers that line from Last of the Mohicans. What are you talking about?
Millennials barely remember the Last of the Mohicans.
I mean, that movie rocks.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Don't get me wrong. But, like, yeah, I don't know. So, again, the bits mostly land, though. It's there's not a lot of groaners. There's not a lot of moments where you're like, oh, what is that a joke? Come on. Like, most of the stuff is pretty solid. And, you know, if you're allergic to Aaron Taylor Johnson, I got good news. He's barely in it. is the villain immediately obvious? Sure. But, you know, that's Hollywood movies sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, you mean the next future James Bond, Aaron Taylor Johnson, unofficially, wink?
He's so tired of it, too.
Oh, I know he is.
Every time he gets asked about it. I guess I'll close out on, like, I do think there's an interesting choice here to avoid fatalities, which I think is kind of fun. I think it is interesting and sort of in line with the tone of the film. You know, in video games, you'd call it ludonarrative dissonance, right? In movies, it's sort of a different but related thing of, you know, the film is lighthearted, but Indiana Jones has killed 800 Nazis throughout the film in pretty gruesome ways. So, like, this movie definitely, like, kind of recognizes that it wants to be lighthearted and goes out of its way to show that Cole is never killing people. He is simply incapacitating them. And I thought that
was
an interesting
choice. Well, the post-credit stinger.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about the post-credit.
Well, but he didn't kill anyone.
You're right. He didn't.
I'm not gonna. We didn't say no one died. We just said he didn't kill anyone.
That's true. I did forget about the stinger, but other than that,
that's it. Yeah.
I forgot about that. So that does kind of shoot some holes in my theory. But it was interesting throughout the movie. I just kept noticing, like, the cutaways to, like, oh, you remember that guy that took a big hit? He's still fine.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
There's
that's
a couple
good point.
Of those.
Yeah.
And I think, like, there's a definite, like, stylistic flair. You know, there's a scene where Gosling is under the influence of some psychedelics and has to do a fight, and it definitely feels like Leach trying to keep up with Stahelski, right? As far as, like, see, I can do something that looks kind of flashy and neon too, it's definitely like I'm glad he's stepping up his game, but I want him to. You know, I want Stahelski to keep Leach hungry. I mean, John Wick 4 just looks like not many movies look that good.
No.
Yeah.
And you want that from the other half of that team, you know, and I still struggle to see in Leach what I see in Stahelski as far as
the action's,
you know,
still, it's a lot better in this one.
It's good.
Yeah.
Than some, like, Bullet Train, for example.
Yeah. I don't think he's come close to touching Atomic Blonde yet, though.
No.
I mean, that movie is sick as far as, I mean, the big, obviously, like, hallway fights are kind of passe now, but it was a very impressive hallway / stairwell sequence. Some really cool driving stunts in that movie. And again, like, I don't want to downplay the stunts in this film because there's some cool stuff, but again, like, it's not. It doesn't quite break through to that next level for me.
Mm-hmm.
Bohannon, you were nodding your head a lot. And
yeah.
I remember when we came out of the screening, you were like, not enough ROM in my comm.
Yes.
I know you're kind of on this boat, too.
I'm on this boat. I echo a lot of Dalton's sentiment here because, first of all, I'm just offended that David Leitch has done this twice to me of selling me a movie that I didn't really get to see. I watched Atomic Blonde trailer at, like, every single weekend for an entire summer, and by the time the film came out, I don't know if it was just me being overhyped and overprimed, but it delivered on all the stunts for me, but then the story to me just, like, was a big just wet nothing, and that made me very, very sad. And so this movie, again, getting sold on these amazing trailer packages, and they're flashy and all these great cute rom-com moments, like montages and all this stuff, and I'm like, okay, I feel like we're kind of, you know, I can't really hold up Lost City of D as, like, the best recent action rom-com that I can think of, but it's definitely a very good entry into this genre, and I was thinking we might be getting that, and that is not what we get at all, which is unfortunate because that is definitely where the marketing push is going. It kills me to say that, like, those moments in the trailer where it's like, oh, they're sitting and she's, like, sitting up on the, like, lip of a, like, a flatbed box truck, and he's, like, next to her and they're drinking. Like, these are part of montage sequences, just so you're not sold a lie too, listener. These are not part of very extended, long, like, chemistry building moments. And that's kind of some of the stuff, like, the heart for me at times was really, really missing throughout the film. I keep thinking about how I would fix this movie. I mean, I think that not that it's broken. It just, there is definitely clear room for improvement. I would say either completely rejigger the plot. Let's just like skip the romance completely. Just like have it be a much more straightforward story, kind of more like the TV show. Or because it's like, it could be just like him in wrong place at the wrong time. He falls into this like underbelly and now he's just like having to be a stunt guy in a crime underbelly of, you know, Sydney or wherever. Or to actually do the balancing rom-com thing, it needed at least 1 to 2 to maybe 3 action set pieces less.
Like the conflict that keeps them apart feels so manufactured,
it
right?
It is so painfully so.
And it's just like the movie would be more interesting if we got more of them together.
Right.
Yeah, which I think.
Or more together, or more they actually position it in a way that you're like, are they actually going to get together at the end?
Where
seems like a foregone conclusion that they're going to get back together in the whole movie. Yeah.
It's, so think about it this way. I feel like, that might be an overstatement. Die Hard, in comparison to this film, like, we know what that film is about. It's like one guy, he's going in, he's saving his nebulous agreed wife, Christmas party, whatever. We get it. But, like, this is trying, I feel like, the wife in Die Hard, there's like maybe a little bit of comparable screen time to Emily Blunt. Like they're kept apart for so long and he's off doing like stunts and investigating and all these like shenanigans, and it leaves Blunt with not a lot to do. And I'm just imagining like the recut Die Hard trailer that makes it like appear to be a, like more of an action comedy, action romantic comedy or something. And so it's just like an interesting, I mean, it worked on me. I mean, I was going to see this movie regardless because I love Ryan Gosling. I love everyone attached to this project. But it's like, he got me again with that trailer. Got me on that bait and switch. It just makes me so, so bummed. So the stunts were amazing. But after a while, for me personally, I got to a point of like so saturation and overstimulation on, it's like, I need a second to like process the previous scene, and it feels like we're just ramping and ramping, and you get to a point of such overstimulation where it doesn't like necessarily mean much anymore.
There's at least a good 15 minutes that could probably be cut with being vague. There's a second time they go back to someone's apartment that whole thing was like
a snoozer.
Yeah. Like at the end of the second act, beginning of act three is kind of muddled and it feels really drug out.
Nobody likes backtracking.
Yeah. No, people are just running around. There's at least two or three moments where there's backtracking, Gosling in the hotel as well. There's like, I mean, it's played for a laugh, but it's also like, okay, when are we going to get this going, you know? And then same thing with the apartment sequence. So yeah, there's a lot to improve here, but I appreciate that it isn't a cape movie. I appreciate that it is trying to be its own thing, and it's not, it is attached to a larger IP, but not anything that would be really encouraging people to come and see this.
Gen X or demographic.
Yeah, it's like, So that's kind of where I stand and sit on it. Wanted more, but it's okay. It's okay, Gosling. It's okay. This is what we got.
I think you're so right to name check The Lost City too, because that's like such a, like tonally very similar movie, but like, a movie that cost about half as much to make.
Exactly. Oh, really?
And
Star is just as big too.
The Star is just as big, but is obviously has like less action set pieces and has, you know, has some stunt sequences, but is a lot less focused on that aspect of the film. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously you got to take that into consideration, but like, I don't know. That movie feels like it's got a pretty good handle on when to like do banter and when to have action.
Yeah.
And I don't know that The Fall Guy does. Caleb, where are you? Kind of, it seems like you're kind of landing where we're at.
Maybe slightly warmer. Like a smidgen.
Yeah.
I do love the practical stunts. There's the final sequence, which I won't spoil, but I thought it was just so much fun. It was a great time. You seeing it all come together is great. The problem is, as the audience, you're 2 steps ahead of the story at every point. And especially by the time you get to that sequence I referenced earlier where they go back to this one location they'd already been to, I'm like, okay, but I know this isn't the final one and I know we're going to get to this other one that's going to be way bigger. So what if we just like got to that one?
Right.
And there's a whole like 20 minutes in there where you're just like, okay, well, I mean, I guess I'm here.
well, okay, there's a twist, I guess. But I mean, it just felt like it could be 20. Honestly, I have a lot of the same problems I had with Bullet Train, which is another movie I like, don't love, but I have a lot of fun with it. This honestly feels like a pretty good comp in terms of my how much I like it, which is, you know, I'm glad I saw it on the big screen. It's not Capes. It's got a fun premise. The action is better than Bullet Train.
For sure.
Considerably, sure. Even yeah. though it's not even close to John Wick levels, but it's pretty good compared to most other action movies we're watching on the big screen. But I mean, otherwise, it's just solid. Solid. I would have loved more of that.
Serviceable.
Serviceable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't regret seeing it.
I certainly don't.
We had a great time. We all laughed. I'm probably going to watch it again when it hits streaming and be really happy it's on streaming. But I'm also going to go tell people who are interested, you should go see it, because I feel like this movie should theoretically, other than maybe the youngins, and I say youngins, people under the age of 25, I think it hits a lot of the things that people are looking for, which is something that seems more original, something that's more practical. It's not a bunch of CG garbledygook. So I'd recommend it. But at the end of the day, it's just okay. There should have been more romance. I think that there was definitely some scripting issues with the romance. I think it needed to go one way or the other. Either it needed to be like, man, I actually don't know if they're going to work it out. Let's find out. And that's going to be the tension. Or it needed to be, oh, they're super going to be together. Let's just make them be cutie face for like two or three more big scenes.
Yeah, and then the tension is more that we're keeping them away from each other 100%. Instead of, you know, her being sad and drunk at karaoke.
Their storylines just never, like, Die Hard was a good pull too, because like Holly has stuff to do in there.
Right.
Like, she's in combat, you know, mentally and emotionally with Hans Gruber throughout the film. And like, we get like one note where we know Emily Blunt is interacting with the villain and Emily Blunt is maybe starting to suspect, but doesn't know. And so we get like one beat of that.
Yeah.
But it's just, she just, as you said, never has enough to do.
And then she has one moment of getting to demonstrate some fighting ability for pretty reasons. Fun. It was a fun sequence, but then due to plot reasons, it doesn't amount to anything. It doesn't have to be. It has no forward purpose, you know, for the film itself in terms of plot. So, yeah.
I will say, though, I really, and I don't know, I guess apparently a lot of people don't like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I, for one, found that his performance as Tom Ryder, a.k.a. Matthew McConaughey, to be pretty fantastic.
Well, and it's like the character within the Metal Storm, which, like, I love that they just used the Metal Gear Solid font.
Yes.
Yes.
I was just, like, laughing at the whole movie.
The Dune musical sting.
Dude,
it's
incredible.
I about, like, shit myself. That's so funny.
Incredible joke. A joke, like, as far as, like, making a joke about a movie that came out the same year as you, like, up there with Hell's a Poppin' from 41 making a Rosebud joke. Citizen Kane Rosebud joke from a movie that came out, like, the summer prior. Like, crazy to do a Dune, like, just to absolutely riff on the Dune music entirely.
And, you know,
such a funny bit.
I do think the meta stuff worked a little better for me in this. And in the case of, well, for a couple of different reasons, it worked better for me maybe than for you, Dalton. Not all the references land, but a lot of them do. And
I think
for one, appreciate my Fast and Furious Ranch references in the movies. But we also get, on top of that, you get to see that even in the fiction, the characters in the Hollywood presenting, the people who are working on these movies freaking love movies. It's their language, it's their passion. And I really thought that shined through and really worked for me pretty well.
Yeah.
I feel that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, outside of the no capes, is there anything else in particular that you think sets this film apart from other things that we're used to getting during the summer?
Well, you kind of just touched on it, right? Like, it is so much, I mean, so many of the movies about movies, to make it as hard to parse as possible. So many of them are like prestige-y, right? They're sort of like, I mean, I guess Babylon's very crass, but you know, that's sort of in the same lane that I'm thinking of. Like, The Artist, I guess, you know.
But they're all gunning for the Oscars.
Yeah, like, they're all gunning for, there's never like a, just gunning for like box office dollars and crowd-pleasing, reactions.
Yeah.
So it is kind of fun to have a blockbuster that is like, movies, you know, we love the cinema, even those of us who only come out during the summertime. Like, there's something kind of charming and magical about that,
like
as a lover of the pictures.
Yeah.
Well, and we, like you were saying, more prestige focused movies that really don't usually go out of their way to reference other movies within the fiction. Or if they do, it's more like, oh, we got to beat that other movie. This one's like, yeah, here's just a quote that I'm going to say because it fits in with my life motto on the set of this movie that I'm working on. Just, yeah, it's fun. It's cute.
Yeah, it does make me think a little bit of Altman's The Player, just in terms of like how every conversation is about movies, which is kind of fun. As far as, you know, other movies about movies that I like.
Yeah.
I was trying to think if there's anything else. I do think the commitment to sort of bringing back the romance subplot as a key part of the action blockbuster feels huge in some ways because of how like romanceless and sexless Kevin Feige's universe is.
Yeah.
And so that feels like, again, like I know it doesn't reach the heights of The Mummy, but that it is aspiring to sort of that kind of fare is heartening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I might have been sold that, you know, we were going to get something like that in the trailers, but the fact that you're saying, like, these are real, these people have such amazing chemistry together. Like, it cannot be overstated.
I can't wait to watch them drink those spicy margaritas.
I know, exactly. And I truly believe Gosling's affection for her, like, in terms of his care, his ability to act. Oh, this bit. Do you guys remember the helicopter hat bit where?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that was just a piece of business that came about because of. Emily Blunt is wearing a straw, like gardener's hat, and she's sitting under like kind of on helicopter, and the blades agitate the air, and then her hat flies off. I think this was not necessarily planned, just based on the little pieces of business. It seemed to linger a little bit in a way that made it seem like this was
happy accidents.
A happy, positive accident. Everyone stayed in character, and Gosling puts it on her head and then cinches her little bolo tie under her chin. It was just so precious.
It was very cute.
And so there's a lot of really great touches like that throughout the film. And I'm excited to see, I mean, it's unnerving if the box office doesn't pan out for them that maybe the wrong lesson will be gleaned, which is like, oh, people don't want cutesy stuff in the movies. Whereas that's not quite, hopefully not the studio takeaway, but Gosling's charisma. I mean, he didn't carry the movie, but he carried a lot of the non-stunt portions of the movie.
He's truly very strong in this.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's so interesting to me that he waited this long in his career to be like, yes, I'm a movie star. I'm going to do like multiple big studio projects. I'm not doing the art house. Like, and he's been so committed to art house and indie projects throughout his career.
Yep.
I mean, and again, I've obviously would love to see him come back to those, but it's so interesting to see him take sort of the public affection for him and his like really strong dramatic chops and take that to stuff like Barbie in this.
Yeah. Makes it elevate him.
He's so effortless with the charm. Like he just makes it look so easy in terms of like from like the awkward pauses, to the laughs, to that little moments like that where he feels like almost sensual. He's just got one of those. He makes acting and being a movie star look easy. It's so rare that we get that these days.
He simply has the juice.
He's got the juice. I will tell you what my hypothesis is. I don't know. He's probably on the record, so not much of a hypothesis. Him and Eva Mendes have two kids they got to pay, you know, take care of. They're not in the public eye, but I mean, he said on a couple of the interviews that he's, at least for the foreseeable future, not going to go back to darker, moodier fare because he's like, I take those roles really seriously and it affects me mentally. So when I'm home, I need to be on grade A status. And he's like, and he says he talks over everything with Eva Mendes before they choose it. So I think it's one of those, like, he's been doing the work as a performer for years. He's got the chops and now he's got the opportunities coming his way. As long as he thinks they're good ones, why would he say no?
Yeah. Truly, like one of our generation's like unambiguous movie stars.
Yeah.
And Blunt, like, similarly has like such an interesting run. I know you want to talk about that. I'm realizing we're going to talk about this here in a little bit.
Yeah, you're good. Go for it.
Yeah, I just like to go from character actor to sort of in demand to critical darling to, you know, I mean, being married to Grzinski and sort of becoming America's, you know, transatlantic sweetheart, just an interesting run for her. And to see her kind of, were the jumpsuits giving you Gerwig too?
Yes. Yeah. I could not. Yeah. I just, every time she showed up in one of those jumpsuits, I couldn't take my eyes off of them.
They're spectacular.
Absolutely incredible.
She said that Gerwig was one of her, models for like what she was leaning into for the type of director she wanted to be on set. Yeah.
That's really charming. And then of course, because I am the miserable, terrible curmudgeon I am, I immediately think of this Kristen Stewart quote I just saw today where she was like, yeah, Hollywood wants to promote like 4 female filmmakers at a time. It's bullshit.
I mean, both things can be true.
Yeah. Two things can be true. You're so right. Two things can be true.
But no, I think she's super charming. I think she's also got the movie star juice, not quite the charm that you would get out of a Gosling, but she brings a different thing to the table where you just really, everything she says, you believe her. Sincerity is probably the right word that she brings to it. And you're just constantly rooting for her because, especially given the role she's playing, she's a director who finally made her break. Mm-hmm. And you're just rooting for her both to figure out this movie, but also to work it out with Ryan Gosling. You know? Yeah. And you believe her for every second. And they have a lot of strong chemistry, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is just sort of, you want that Barbenheimer crossover effect to bleed over to this year a little bit more, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised.
That's what, oh my God, is this a Universal picture?
This is Universal, yeah, okay. Yes.
And, you know, kudos to Universal for being the studio that is trying to really do different stuff lately. I credit where it's due. But yeah, you watch this and you're like, damn, you know Universal thought sort of that Barbie. They really, I mean, especially with sort of the patter they were doing at the Oscars about, you know, the like, oh, my movie, your movie.
Yeah.
Like definitely leaning into that. Like, you know, that's like what the industry really wanted for this. And like, they didn't turn this movie into an event in any meaningful way.
It's interesting to know. It's like, where was the disconnect from the marketing team? Like on, you know, maybe it needed a later summer release, but probably for reasons it got pushed up and, you know.
Well, I do, and we can talk about this now or in spoilers, but I did really want to talk about exactly why we think this movie didn't quite hit. And I bring this up because this hits on the point. One of the points is this movie has two of the most bankable movie stars from two of the biggest movies of last year.
Yeah.
It's an action comedy, which theoretically appeals to a very wide demographic. It's not superheroes, which in this scenario you would think would play to like a lot of the feedback we're seeing in the marketplace, which is we're tired of superheroes. So Matt Singer actually wrote a great piece on this. I can link it in the notes on the on my side of things. But
simply one of the best, you know?
Oh, yeah. Matt Singer?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Always asking the right questions. The story was, what the hell do people want out of movies?
Yeah.
And he wrote a whole big thing about, he's like, I don't even understand why this isn't working. It has everything. As a studio executive, you're like, we've got this, we got that, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of runs in a line.
And, you know, it's an old TV show just for, you know, some of that money.
Yeah. For the older folks who watch the TV show. Yeah. So he said he did, I won't read the article, but he did do a tweet follow-up where he said, I asked, here are the most common answers I got.
Mm.
Number one, movies are expensive. I wait for streaming. Number two, trailers were bad. Number three, being based on an old show made it seem unoriginal. Mm. Number four, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are old. The lead should have been younger. Number five, shut up, old man.
Wow. And if you take streaming as another shut up, old man, that's 3 out of 5 shut up, old man.
Yeah.
So it really is like, you know, they'll come out for some stuff, but we definitely, there is a generational divide as per, you know, theater going, which, you know, I might be making more of that than there is to make of that, because there's plenty of people our age who are like hardcore, I don't go to the movies anymore.
Absolutely.
For sure.
You know, so that's, it is not just a generational thing.
And the millennials are, I think the trend starts with the millennials though, but we see, you know, Gen Z, the next generation. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I don't think it's just the movies. I just think simply
the theaters are poorly maintained. They're too expensive. Concessions suck. Like,
you have streaming options at home. There's just more, the attention economy, which is a whole other topic, but like, there's simply more choices for what to do with your time these days that you can do at home. And also, why would you go to a theater? There's people there. I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to sit next to people. You know, just
things it's like
that.
If I turn on Netflix with my girlfriends, I can just have my phone open and have like 3 tabs on, and we're all scrolling various feeds, and there's a movie on in the background. Like, that's what the average, you know, like millennial Gen Z movie going experience at home is like, and it's not necessarily what I want for a movie going experience. But it is unfortunate to think that. Oh, I was talking to a friend of mine, how she was mentioning is like kind of the bemoaning the end of cinema. And she's like, yeah, I think watching over a shoulder at the gym, watching someone watch the third Lord of the Rings movie on their phone as they're on the treadmill. You know what I mean? That's kind of where we are at, is like we are on our phones at the treadmill, like on the smallest, tiny black screen possible, watching some of the greatest like action set pieces, practical effects. Like, I know.
Yeah, it hurts. just thinking about Uncle David, you know, how disappointed he would be.
It's so tough. We're in a weird transitional state in the evolution of cinema. Dalton, I think this is something maybe you and I will talk about on another podcast soon, but it's sure. we're in a period of transition, and it's, I think we're all just kind of uncertain, including executives. Everyone's just kind of uncertain about what's the next thing going to look like.
It's spaghetti mode, dude. Like, yeah. After superheroes got everyone out of that chokehold for the past 15 years, like, no one knows what works anymore to get people in the seats. It's like, okay, sometimes having a bankable star works, because, you know, we got Zendaya and we have Timothy, and, you know, probably a lot more of the Gen Z crowd went and saw Dune than
sure.
potentially possible. Oh,
okay. Dune was a hit.
Part of it.
Yeah. And then, but then sometimes that doesn't work. Like, we have these two stars and maybe they're too old for, you know, some demographics. Does an IP work? Because sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. Like, it'll be interesting to see. I hate using this language to already apply to like this new push of like the Mattel, you know, product IPs becoming films, like the Sims movie, which I'm so excited about. Actually, seeing where all of these go, like in phase two of this kind of this film discussion, I think that'll really help cement what it feels like we're in like Spider-Man 1 era all over again.
Right. Yeah. Well, but with toys and video games.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's going to be curious to see if we see that. I think I'm curious to see so we saw Barbie was a huge hit. Are more Mattel properties going to be successful? Because if we get one or two more hits, the answer is, oh, that's all we're going
to
get.
We're off to the races.
Yeah. But if it's, nope, those flopped, then it's back to, oh God, what do we do? So anyway, I know this is off topic, but when a movie like The Fall Guy that seemingly has all of the different bullets that you would want as an executive.
A four-quadrant crowd pleaser, mm-hmm. ready to go.
Ready to go with two of the biggest stars from last year. That's the thing that's crazy to me. Well,
too old.
Yeah.
Late 30s is too old.
Late 30s, 40s.
We are irrelevant.
We're the olds now, guys.
That's fine. Yeah. It was bound to happen eventually.
Before we get to ratings, I do want to just drill into the what we thought about the actual stunt work. I know we've sort of heaped praise on it so far. Do we think this movie will in any way get the Academy's attention that could potentially lead to a Best Stunts Oscar?
No shot. Not even the smallest glimmer. No, if John Wick 4 didn't, get them. John Wick 4 barely got them to do a montage about stunts. They had that in this coming out this year. So, like, Stahelski and Leach are, if anybody can make it happen, it's the two of them. Like, it is, if their movies continue to do well, and Leach's of the two of them are doing worse, but, like, if the two of them can remain a force in this industry, I see it as a possibility. I do not think this film is going to be the one that turns the tide on the conversation.
I do think that them bringing it up within the text of the film itself does help at least plant a seed in the average audience member's mind that isn't necessarily keyed into this conversation. These are folks that probably don't watch the Academy Awards. They maybe see like, okay, who won Best Picture, when they refresh their feed the next morning. It's like, great, now I know, we can move on with our lives, that kind of thing. But I think that it feels like a long game play. It's heartbreaking with John Wick. That one's the one that really kills me. But
that's incredible. It's so funny though that we got that montage last year, because then it's like, oh yeah, we know that you know
that you want this,
and we know that we should be giving it one. But what if we just gave it a montage instead?
And what if we, not to poo-poo the casting process,
which is cool, and they've been fighting for that for a long time.
Yes. However,
big however,
people have died doing stunts. I'm not so sure about casting directors dying doing their job.
They do a great job. The casting folks do. We can also think of adding two categories at the same time if we felt like it.
Exactly.
You know,
such a, big old boats take a long time to turn, but it sure is annoying.
Yeah.
You know, by the time they get that Oscar out, I don't know if the Oscars is going to be broadcast anymore.
No.
The way we're going.
Yeah.
No kidding.
well, hey, How would we rate this film? And I don't know, Dalton, maybe we can just do a good old shelf for trash for old time's sake.
Yeah. On the garbage, let's do a shelf for trash. Yeah. Usually on the garbage chute, we kind of do more of a stream or screen or skip. But yeah, I say shelf for trash it. Let's do old time's sake. I am gently, ever so gently tossing this one on the trash myself. I do think it's worth getting out to see if you like the experience of being in a movie theater with strangers. If you're a perverse weirdo like myself, it's worth it. But you know, if you're only going to go to a couple movies this summer, you know, get to Challengers or get God forbid, get to Civil War, which is a movie I actually like less than The Fall Guy.
Or Furiosa, another movie that is allegedly going to have good
wait
stunts.
For Furiosa. Yeah, if you're excited for stunts, wait for Furiosa. But you know, if you're going to try to catch most of the summer releases, this is one worth going to see. It's not bad. I've certainly seen worse movies.
Yeah, certainly seen worse movies as he tosses it in the trash. Alexandra Bohannon.
Yeah, this is a gentle trash for me, dog. And I've been excited about this movie for watching every single time and watching the trailer every single time for every movie I've watched at Flix for the past like 3 or 4 months. So it's like it breaks my heart a little bit, but that's where it goes because it doesn't achieve the full potential of all of the things within it, which I think is the heartbreaking, frustrating part, is like you can see it, it's there. It just needed way more refinement in a script and maybe less money to have some more limitations upon it.
Absolutely. You nailed that right there. Because then if you have less money for stunts, you have to focus on the ROM side.
Yeah,
of the
you
com.
Have to kind of re-engage with stuff that you probably would pass over so you can make a car flip a few more times. Yeah, definitely just a trash. It's a good one for if you're a summertime completionist. And definitely, I think this would be a fun first date movie.
Oh, sure. Oh,
this would be a great, totally. Because it's also so like soft in terms of like you're not watching overly aggressive sexual maneuvers. Like, you know, I haven't gotten the privilege to see Challengers yet because I was out of pocket last week, but I like it's not going to be leading with like steamy hot something something that would make people uncomfortable.
Sure.
I think this would be a fun first date movie. Stream it with your girlfriends, but you don't need to buy it.
Yeah, no. If Challengers is a little too spicy for you, this is definitely like this is the sugar to Challengers spice for sure.
Yeah.
Good way to put it. You just really articulated. I know I name checked Civil War, and you sort of articulating like the joy is maybe the wrong word. The anticipation a trailer can really, especially if you see it a lot throughout the season.
Yeah. Yep.
That's I know what you mean.
Yeah. Like, and then my anti-anticipation for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, that was a gift. The day that trailer stopped playing in front of every movie.
Best the part about the movie
months.
Was it stopped
truly.
Playing the trailer one day.
Yeah.
Tall, dark, and horny at 12 o'clock.
Caleb.
Busted makes me feel good. All right. Let's go, Caleb.
You know, Carrie Coon deserves better. Sorry.
Oh, my God. Yes, she does.
Sorry. Anyway.
Oh, please.
What do you think? Show for trash, Caleb.
Can I get it? Oh, man, I feel terrible.
You can do a digital purchase.
You can give the code in the Walmart bin.
Yeah, let's just say, maybe it's, I hate to say it because I'm all about right now. I got off the physical media train where I slowed way down for several years. But now that it's like, this institution is probably not going to be with us for too much longer, or at least not as it currently exists. So I want to say very gentle shelf. If the shelf price is super discounted,
if the price is right.
$5.99.
Yeah, $5.99 for the 4K. Yeah.
Or it's in one of those multi-packs where it's like, it would be in Lost City of D, this movie. Let's see. I can't think of anything else that is in the similar wheelhouse from the past like 10 years, unfortunately, because I'm just pulling
Romancing
the Stone.
Well, and they don't make a ton of these anymore. Yeah.
No.
I'm also just pulling Romancing the Stone and The Mummy. Yeah.
You know, it's also telling that the two examples we come up with are, you know, The Mummy just celebrated 25. So, which, by the way, great movie. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I would just say the only thing I want to add to what you guys said is, go out and see it because I really want more movies like this to get made. And I do absolutely, I'm not just saying go see it because I'm that selfish. I actually think if you go watch this, you will have a good time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you'll have a great time. I absolutely would co-sign that.
Am I going to watch it over and over again?
That's the kicker with shelf or trash. It's like, I'm not going to put this on a shelf for it to gather dust and me not to watch it again. But definitely go see it in theaters if you want to see better versions of this,
yes,
which I fucking do. So,
and I want, and you know, as much as I know we have mixed feelings about David Leitch, I want him to keep making movies.
Same. Yeah. The more you iterate at your craft, that you can only fail upwards. You can only get better. And that's not saying this movie is a failure by any stretch. It's just, you know,
I would say it's much more a success than Bullet Train by a wide margin.
I agree. And I like Bullet Train a lot more than you, but I definitely think this is at least one to not two steps up from Bullet Train.
Yeah.
Well, what else would we recommend to go alongside, or maybe instead of on going on the shelf, what other film would you recommend to our listeners, Alexandra Bohannon?
I'm going to steal Dalton's thunder and just say John Wick. Obviously, all of them, just, you know, watch it. Another one that when I was leaving the theater that I talked to my fabulous co-potters about was Rumble in the Bronx, because that one's like a go-to for me. If I want to see some death-defying stunts, and that's another movie where it's like, okay, we don't necessarily have to have the most perfect, you know, beautifully narratively constructed plot, but that plot works to sell the story and the stunts work to serve the plot. Whereas this film, I don't think it has either of them at times. Sometimes it just feels like a stunt highlight reel in the best way, but also, you know, I want to watch a movie at the same time. So, oh, and then Die Hard, because we've been talking about it, and I love that movie as well.
Always Die Hard.
Just thinking about the sequence at the front of the movie with him doing that big drop made me think of the Hans Gruber fall out the window. And then, yeah, I guess just throw in Mission Impossible's, whichever you're feeling into that. I think specifically just thinking of there was like a Tom Cruise name drop in there as one of like the jokes.
Okay,
and there was
okay.
a lot of that right, for so like, do I do my own stunts and that kind of thing.
I have to say though, sorry not to cut you off. It is Ryan Gosling who says, please make me look more like Tom Cruise. And I'm like, my guy, you got it way more than Tom Cruise ever did. Anyway, continue.
Yes. No. So, but those are my recommendations. Just watch more action film, more stunty film. That's where I'm at.
Great recommends, Alex. Dalton Stewart.
I mean, you gotta go. I loathe as I am to heap praise on this man, you gotta go with one of the great stunt folk movies. You gotta go with Death Proof.
Yeah.
You gotta see them. You gotta see them gals take out Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
You simply must.
It's a good
one. Is such a badass film. I hate, as loath as I am to say it. I would also recommend the Donnie Yen film Kung Fu Jungle, which has also been released as Kung Fu Killer and Last of the Best. It fully ends with just like art. It's like a who's who of Chinese martial artists and stunt people. But at the end, it's like, I think it's a Hong Kong Chinese co-production. But anyway, at the end, like they have a whole like, this guy was in it, and this guy, like, it's just dedicated to the stunt folk at the end. So, yeah,
that's awesome.
Really fun, like, don't we love our martial artists, people? I Kung Fu Jungle's really fun. I would recommend that one.
Donnie Yen is another one of those. I mean, I know he doesn't have quite the same reputation here in the States as he does overseas, but, man, that guy's another Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves level, does all his own stunts and makes it look easy.
Nice. He's just been doing martial arts his whole life. I mean, he straight up was said, like, if MMA had come out, like, earlier, if it had, like, become a thing when I was a younger person, he's like, I don't know that I would be acting. Like, he is a hardcore martial artist. He's the real
cool.
deal.
Cool.
Oh, love it. Love to hear it. You guys have made a lot of the recommendations I have in my mind. I think, Dalton, you gave a Jackass series a shout out. I think those are a great example of seeing what does it look like when people who aren't stuntmen try to do stunts, showcasing how good stuntmen are at their jobs, number one. I also had The Lost City and Hot Rod as two comedies on here.
Hot Rod,
in terms of like films about stunts, where The Lost City being a kind of another recent rom com. I'm gonna throw in The Raid.
Which
is incredible action. The first one more than the second one. I do like the second one, but the first one's a lot more like roll up your sleeves. You could tell they did it on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
And probably, you know, I'm not saying it's a good thing in terms of like human working conditions. But for cinema, it looks like a lot of those guys probably super got actually hurt pretty bad.
They, you know, they didn't really. You should look into it. It's like a pretty cool set. They pre-vised everything.
Okay.
But you know.
The original film?
Yeah. Oh, but wow. It's, you know, it's not digital pre-vis. It's like down and dirty, shoot it as cheap and quick as possible, mm-hmm. like in a garage. Like, what's the fight scene going to look like? And you just have guys working through the choreography. Like, at that level, I mean, you know, they're real martial artists, so they know how to pull their punches for starters. But yeah, I mean, like, they just really worked it. And like, Evans as a filmmaker, you know, really wanted to make sure that him and the camera team and the stunt team were all on the same page. And that's what you have to have. You have to have this, all the filmmakers on the same page. Otherwise the stunts will suffer. And that's why so much of the Marvel stuff looks so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, you got to have good stunts at the beginning and all that other stuff. Like if you've got to have those things working together. And a lot of times the fewer cooks you have in the kitchen, the better it looks, just because less people, the things you have to work through when you're actually shooting the film, I would say.
Yeah. It's always a team effort. And it's so interesting. The world of stunts is so cool and is endlessly like a rabbit hole you can never find the bottom of. It's so cool. This won't come out in time for me to plug this, but another cool stunt folk. We're screening Buster Keaton's The General at my live show down in front that I do with Alex Sanchez on the 10th. This won't drop in time, so you missed it. But yeah, go watch Buster Keaton's The General, or any Buster Keaton for that matter. If you want to like see the birthplace of stunts as we know them, like truly some buck wild stuff that will blow your mind.
Man, Buster Keaton, he's one of the originals.
Well, and those talk about bad working conditions. All those people get hurt very badly.
Yeah. That's more akin to Jackass than...
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Do you guys have anything you want to hit on in spoilers? Because we kind of covered everything so far.
No, I don't think there's any plots.
We could just say... We can actually reveal who's the big bad.
All right. So, listeners, there's our ratings and recommendations. So, if you don't want to be spoiled on the huge, shocking, out-of-nowhere plot reveals of the film, go ahead and tune out now. All right, and we're back.
Yeah. You put Hannah Wandingham in a brunette wig.
Come on. Sipping Coke out of a Coke can with a straw? Come on.
Yeah. Diet Coke with a straw is one of the most evil beverages imaginable.
Yeah, brown wig. Yeah. Crazy, the worst taste in clothes and jewelry.
Did you notice the, like...
The phone wristlet. I couldn't stop looking at it.
Yes.
It's
incredible.
Looking at it.
Oh, the phone wristlet.
So as we discover that it's not just Ryder that's in on the gig, it's also Hannah Waddingham, the producer.
Aren't the producers always the bad guys in movies about movies?
I mean,
usually?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, but it also, is that just reflective of real life? Oh, I'm just teasing. one thing that I found really interesting, and I've always had really mixed feelings about this as like a trope, is so at the beginning of the film, part of what ends Ryan Gosling's stunt career is that he had, when he did his big fall out of like a 10 bajillion story building, the rig wasn't serviced right and he actually broke his back. And that was part of the inciting incident as to why he and Emily Blunt weren't communicating and he pushed her away. Okay, all that. So whenever you get the big reveal that it's like, oh yeah, Ryder actually sabotaged his rig, I just get so frustrated with reveals of like, we already know this dude is a bad dude, but let's make him worse by making him like, we do this like kind of cheap reveal that he actually hurt the protagonist in some way. Like there's this,
I am the architect of your pain, James Bond.
Yeah. There's a TV show, and I won't say which one because this is actually a very late spoiler in one of the seasons, but there's a TV show that I really like that there's a plot point where you get to the end of the season, and it turns out that the bad guy that we're finding out he's the bad guy, he actually like had, unbeknownst to the protagonist, had sexually assaulted her while she was drunk at a party. But this is like really... late in the game, super out of nowhere, and I'm just like, why are we doing here? So, and obviously this is not to that degree at all, but at the same time I'm just like, we already know he's a bad dude, like he's kind of a jackass idiot. Like,
well, here's the thing, he also gets a huge monologue where he over explains his plot.
Yes.
And I mean, they kind of make that the joke.
Yeah,
it only works for me at all because he's leaning into evil Matthew McConaughey so hard. That's the only thing, because it's way too long. Even, I mean, at a script level, I think it's broken. It's like, oh, the whole point of this long, drawn-out sequence is that it's long and drawn out because he's a bad guy. And I was just like, all right, guys, that's not funny.
Yeah.
But Matthew McConaughey, him doing his like, whoop,
pop sounds and stuff.
Him playing Space Cowboy and fully doing McConaughey is, and I don't, do they ever name the character? Isn't it just Space Cowboy the entire, the character within Metal Storm?
I think he's just, Space Cowboy.
Great. Good.
Yeah.
That's as it should be.
Yeah.
I, very funny. The McConaugheyisms that he gets on screen are very well observed.
And if you've seen anything McConaughey's in since 2010, he shifted out of his rom-com phase, you'll see it all from a mile away.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Which
makes me wonder, and I bet this is some super inside baseball, but it makes me think the producer's also a comp for some other Hollywood producer working within Hollywood that people in the industry know about. It just seemed like very specific. Big wig, the sipping, the
Diet Coke addiction.
Yeah.
Probably an amalgamation of a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
The wristlets, probably a real observation about somebody.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. This definitely feels informed.
Yes.
Yes. Informed. That's probably the best way. Maybe not a one-to-one, like you said, but these people will all have some trauma from certain producers that put in the character.
And then, so I guess the other things that spoiler town, our post credit sequence where Ryder blows up.
The one fatality confirmed in the film. He fully gets blown up.
He gets blown up because he's walking around his cell phone where he shouldn't be.
Yes. And to Dalton's point that I couldn't call out earlier, because this would have been like spoilery in the non-spoiler section, was the fact that it still works with your theory, because our hero didn't cause his demise.
That's true.
It's his own hubris that caused his demise.
That's right.
I mean, we do still have a body count of one for the movie, but
literally hoisted by his own petard.
Yeah. 100%.
In some ways.
You know, guys.
Somebody else's petard, but you know.
It needed to happen. He needed to go, but also, I kind of hope Tom Ryder just shows up in some other movie someday.
Yeah.
Kind of like, Tom Cruise is the evil producer in Tropic Thunder.
Well, Caleb, could I interest you in Sony's Kraven the Hunter?
Yes!
Well, I've got a product for you, my friend.
I can't wait. Oh, wait, that was delayed till next year, delayed for the third time, because they got to workshop that. They got to make sure it's perfect for all the Madam Webheads out there.
Yeah, the Madam Webheads.
That's Derek Cinfrance, right? Or however you say his name.
Oh, God, is it?
I think it is.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I think it's like somebody crazy like that.
I mean, it also has Russell Crowe in it, so, hold on, I'm looking. No, J.C. Chandor.
That's his Chandor, that's right.
Who I also like. What a weird choice.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why?
It's crazy how he, you make a movie about a financial collapse, and you go, you know what, I'm not going to move laterally, I'm going to make a drug heist movie with Ben Affleck.
For Netflix.
And then you have no choice but to make a superhero movie after that, I guess.
Yeah.
Once you prove you could make an action movie, they'll come for you.
No one is safe in Hollywood.
No one is safe.
So true.
Yeah.
This has been a hoot.
This has been a great time, guys. Nice throwback to a time
the
of
old days.
The old days. Yes. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us, Dalton, Alex, for turning out.
Yes.
Where can the people of the internet keep up with you and all the things you're doing? Dalton, of course, this being on the Good Trash feed as well as the Cinematic Schematic feed. Where can people follow you?
If you're listening to this on the Cinematic Schematic feed, please come check out the Good Trash Genre Cast. Dropping episodes every Friday for far too long now.
How many episodes do you guys have right now?
Oh, God, I don't know.
600?
Over 400, under 5, I think, still. Okay. Well, we're creeping up on 5, I think, if we haven't hit it already. I got to remember if our John Wick episode was to celebrate 400 or 500.
Wow.
But a lot. 12 years and counting. Our summer of lists is coming up. And also stay tuned for Dead Center coverage. We'll be covering the fest just like you, Caleb.
Yes.
We'll be hanging out a lot, I'm sure. Good Trash Genre Cast on Spotify and Apple and most other podcatchers that still exist. If you want to find me, I'm on Insta and Letterboxd. I'm at Dollywood Squares. Got to drop the A on Letterboxd because of character limits. If you throw my government name in there, it'll probably still pull me up. Insta and Letterboxd if you want to find me individually. And then everything, we're making Good Trash Genre Cast in your podcatcher.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cinematic Schematic listeners, do yourself a favor. Subscribe to the Good Trash Genre Cast today.
Well, now speaking of that, Caleb, if somebody were to be listening to this on the Good Trash feed, what would you need them to know?
Well, you can find all of the things that I do here on the cinematropolis.com. That includes all the episodes of the Cinematic Schematic. If you're wanting to listen to the podcast specifically, look up the Cinematic Schematic where podcasts are found. As you said, Dalton, we do mostly new movie releases, but we try to add a deep dive. We do a spoiler review.
Deep.
Yeah, like 2 hours long deep sometimes, or three
you're
hours.
Sort of like, you know. What if the big picture were blank check?
Yeah.
In some ways, as far as like going deep and really trying to like crack the movie open and bring in all the context. 100%. Which I love.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. Because we think that, you know, if you're going to spend that much time watching and think about it, might as well get it on a mic and share it with friends and other folks who love talking about movies. We hope that it's provides like a nice little extra. Once you watch the movie, you come home, listen to the podcast, and then it, love it or hate it, it gives you something to think about afterwards. But yeah, you can find that, the Cinematic Schematic. As you said, we'll be both be covering Dead Center, probably working from the press room. So if we crash each other's shows or you hear me shouting on the Good Trash feed, you know, probably means I hate Dalton. I'm mad at Dalton for some reason.
Yeah, right. I scurry over to Caleb's mic to tell him he's wrong about what was the sexiest short at Sugar and Spice.
Yes, let's go. But you can find me on all the social media, C Masters Talk, that's letter C Masters Talk, Instagram, Letterboxd being the big ones. Alexandra Bohannon.
Yeah, you're Hi. Sort of a raconteur, a renaissance woman. There's not much you don't do, dude.
Why, thank you. Yes, you can follow my professional and freelance writing pursuits at by Alex Bohannon on Instagram. I'm also casually re-entering Letterboxd again because I noticed you guys saw because you guys have been liking my reviews. So you can follow me there at, I think I'm Alex V Books there.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So I've just been dipping a toe back in, and I've been enjoying it so far. And let's see. Yeah, everything is going great. And thank you so much for having me on, Caleb and Dalton, because this is a collaboration effort, a meeting of the minds, a crossover event of the century.
A crossover event of the century on Oklahoma Film Podcast. Hey, Alex, one last thing. I'll throw this out there.
Sure.
You had a really cool story on the Edith Head exhibit that came out recently.
Yeah, let me plug that. So
good
one
job.
Of my
good job. That's good
thank
hosting.
You. Yes, it is good hosting.
Excellent
Thanks,
work, Caleb.
So one of my fun hustles is I work as a writer for a luxury magazine. We're a independent magazine in Oklahoma City, come out every other month. And I got the privilege to talk to the curation team behind the Edith Head exhibit coming to the OKC MOA. That's going to start in June and runs through September. It is going to be, I want to stress this, listener, this is a literal once-in-a-lifetime exhibit. This is not going to New York, as people have been saying, that this is going to some other institution. It is going to be the largest Edith Head exhibit in the United States history, with over 80 different costume pieces of memorabilia, two of her Oscar statuettes. There's going to be a film series being shown in the Noble Theater, 35 millimeter prints of some of her greatest hits in terms of her costuming. So that's going to be things like Rear Window and Vertigo, and many more others as part of their summer programming while the exhibit is in town. So if you are interested in any of all of that, go and find my piece. You can find that at Luxury Magazine, and luxury is spelled LuxIere. And that's luxury.co. And you can also just find the Oklahoma City Museum of Art. You can find them on Instagram. Just type in Museum of Art, Oklahoma City Museum of Art in Google, and Edith Head, and all of this will come up. But you definitely want to get your tickets to this. This is a once in a lifetime limited run bonanza. You gotta come. If you're a nerd about movies, if you like this podcast, if you like either of these podcasts, you have to come to this exhibit.
Okies, we do not deserve this.
We don't.
She's such a goat. They based that character in Incredibles off of her.
That's true.
They look exactly the same.
Yes. And she's such an interesting person, just a powerhouse creator, costume over 1,000 movies, most awarded woman in Oscars history, most awarded person in Oscars history, she was nominated for every Oscar from the year the category was created in 1948 until 1966. She's prolific. She's a powerhouse. You have to come and see her. If you're a nerd, this is for you. Come and see it.
Oklahoma City, exclusive. Check it out. Don't miss it. I can't wait to make it a special date night.
Yes.
Alex, so happy for you. Great piece.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So thankful that we have such a cool thing in Oklahoma City happening.
I know it.
Well, listeners, it's been a pleasure. Until next time, you can catch me on the Cinematic Schematic.
And you can catch me on the Good Trash Genre Cast.
Boom diggity.